This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
It's that time of the day of the week.
He has been slaving over this depot, working incredibly hard.
I don't know. I think he's been too distracted by the
actual
show today.
No
he's,
chance.
He's enjoyed the topic.
He's ready to go, man.
We'll see.
I mean, just look at him.
Fired
Would you just
up.
Look at him?
Certainly, good.
Davey Hutz, take it away.
Thanks. I was waiting for somebody to throw it to me to get things rolling on the fact of the day. Let's see here.
Like I said, folks, absolutely.
I don't think I've talked about this one before. I have heard it before, but a live nuclear bomb was ejected over the coast of Georgia, the country. The state, actually, in the United States, not the country. The B-47 plane carrying it was hit by another plane, and the bomb was ejected to prevent detonation during the crash. The bomb was never found and still lies somewhere near the coast.
In the water?
I would presume, but maybe not.
Well,
it says near the coast.
It's the fact of the day. So the fact of the day is that there's a lost nuclear weapon somewhere near Georgia?
Let's go. Yeah, apparently.
Near the coast? Maybe on the coast. Who knows?
1958 Tybee Island mid-air collision.
Tybee?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Okay. You ever been to Tybee?
I have not.
Good spot.
Familiar with it, but I have not been there.
It's a nice place. Big fan.
Trying to see more about this bomb. I don't know. We can look into that later. But anyway,
okay.
The banger of the day is You Can't Always Get What You Want by the Rolling Stones.
Mm-hmm.
It's an absolute classic. Gambling pick.
But if you try sometimes.
You get what you need. The
You just might find. You get what you need.
Dodgers money line for tonight.
There
Got
it
them
is.
Minus 170.
Pick
Last
the
night was trash. It was bad. Leave it at that. But
sorry to hear that.
Yeah, you get that on the big jobs.
Yes, you do.
I guess I've decided today to talk about something that did happen yesterday at SEC Media Days. Not related to the announcement surrounding Texas and Oklahoma.
Okay.
But what I probably would say was the best speech in the history of SEC Media Days.
You're going to talk about an eight-word speech for the next 20 minutes?
Not the next 20, but we'll go down the rabbit hole. So,
Nate, did you see this, by the way?
Yes.
Okay.
The best coach in all the land, outside of Nick Saban. Mike the Pirate Leach.
Mm-hmm.
Did not get an SEC Media Day last year, you know, COVID.
Yeah, he had a lot of
sad.
Had to make up for it.
So, to take care of all the prep time needed. Coach Leach, if you've not seen this, walks up to the mic and he basically says, I ain't much for giving speeches.
Is there any questions?
At this time, I'll open it up to questions.
No, he said, is there any questions, which I thought was really funny.
It's iconic. I was kind of surprised.
He got into like a 10-minute conversation with Paul Feinbaum about ties.
Yeah, he's not a big fan of ties.
He said he wants to strangle the guy who invented ties, which is funny because that's what a tie does to you slowly as you wear it.
All right, I'm not a big opening statement guy, and plus you guys are going to ask whatever you want to know anyway. So let's just go ahead and get started. Is there any questions?
Is there any questions?
So that's how he
No
does
one
it.
Does it better, man. No
he
one.
He was asked about Tennessee. And he did admit he talked to Tennessee and
coup d'etat.
Stated that, you know, they had a coup d'etat over there and I was just glad I wasn't involved.
Didn't get caught up.
Man. I would have liked that. I did get to listen to the drivel yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the conversation. They even put this out there. They were talking. Okay, this is another thing. So, like, I get it's kind of a shtick, but Bear doesn't like anybody. Russell's like, Bear, just tell us a coach you like. And he can't even name anybody that's like, I don't even know if they're still coaching, Like every like he doesn't like anyone that's still around. He's just he's the old man that yells at Cloud. He is Abe Simpson. That is who Bear is. And so they ended up putting out a poll on the station account, but their I think it's their Rickard Ridge Smoking Hot question.
Rickard Ridge.
And so their question was, would you rather be entering year four of the Mike Leach era at UT than where we are now? 56% of people said yes. Had just over 400 votes. So I want to pose that question to you all. Are you happier with where we are at now, or would you rather be entering year four of Mike Leach? The fact that this was a topic on their show is just stupid.
I mean, if you're entering year four with Mike Leach, that implies that he's had somewhat success.
That's what I'm
here,
saying.
So,
yeah,
I voted for Leach.
Yeah, Mike that's Leach. Not even a question.
This was close to 50-50.
Because
well, that's also we have zero sample size on what Heupel.
I mean, worst case, but it's still Heupel year one this year. Worst case scenario, it's Mike Leach year four on the super hot seat because we haven't gotten anything done, and if he sucks this year, then he gets fired and we get Josh Heupel next year. So I'd rather risk that Mike Leach had a lot more success than Jeremy Pruitt.
You're not coming off the worst season in school history. If you're entering year four with Mike Leach.
Yeah, I'd say there's a 94% chance you're not coming off the worst season in school history with Mike Leach in year three.
If he's going into year four, I just...
I feel like that's the type of question that might sound good if you don't really think about it, but once you kind of...
Once you say it out loud.
Once you actually contribute a brain cell or two to that.
The question should just be, would you rather have Josh Heupel or Mike Leach? Not would you rather be going into year four with Mike Leach over Josh Heupel going into year one?
I would take the guy who's proven to do it.
Yeah. I mean, the one guy coached the other guy. Like, he was his coach. I don't know. Like... Anyway.
I don't know. I wanted to take this time to stay on sports a little bit because I know a lot of people come at me. They're like, oh, you're so negative, even though I'm just a realist. Here's my thing. We talked about it yesterday, but the show kind of had to end as it related to the offensive mind of Josh Heupel and is he comparable to Lane Kiffin or Hugh Freeze. That was kind of the conversation piece. But here's my thing. I just think Tennessee's at a point to where this is definitely a gamble. I do think the offense is going to be just fine. But you had to get somebody who is a builder. And that is where my biggest question mark surrounding our current situation is. Can Josh Heupel build a program that is at its lowest point in school history?
Nowhere to go but up.
That's not true. I don't think we'll go lower. But I'm not going
to
sit here and say we can't get worse. Because
I think I will say that. I think I will.
You also said that after Butch Jones, just FYI.
Are you sure?
Yes. I'm 100% positive.
Well, we were going up until the 10-game SEC schedule.
So you're like, we finally fired Butch Jones. Then we had Shiano Sunday. And you're like, well, you know what, guys? It can't get worse. And I was probably in agreement with you. But we need a builder. And so that's where my concerns come from. And I'm going to sit back.
And be negative?
No.
No.
I'm just going to make snarky comments here and there because that's what I do.
Right.
But I'm going to at least remain positive internally. Until I get to see something on the field. And, like, that's the thing I'm looking for. Like, it's not so much results-oriented year one, because I do understand where this program is at. And I know it sucks to say that, because there's no such thing really as moral victories. But what I do want to see, what I want to be able to comprehend is, can I at least watch the game, and even if the players aren't able to execute, are the coaches putting them in a position to where I could at least say, like, all right, well, if he was a little bit faster, if he was a little bit stronger, then this would have worked. If the quarterback was just a little bit more accurate, would this have gone for a big play? Stuff of that nature. And, like, even – because, like, that's what still kind of baffles me about last year and how bad we were getting beat based off guys just running a slant. it's like the players knew it was coming, but adjustments were not made. And we've said it before about Butch Jones. We obviously know it's true about Jeremy Pruitt, but the whole conversation around halftime adjustments are overrated. It's like, no, they are not. Like, no intelligent coach is going to sit here, find me someone who's been successful coaching football at a high level, and then come in here and say, football, halftime adjustments are overrated. They won't.
Did Pruitt and the staff say that, or was it just obvious? Because I know Butch Jones
said it.
He said
Pruitt
it.
Pruitt didn't say it. You could just tell they didn't make adjustments.
Well, I mean, the story about the Georgia game, you know, we go in with the 21-20 lead, get the goal line stop right before the half, and the players are, you know, they're jacked up and excited, like, all right, what are we doing? What? And the coaches were like they didn't have a plan. That's from the, you know, the players themselves. Like, the coaches did not think they had a chance to be in that game, so they weren't even, you know, like, they weren't watching the first half thinking about what can we do different. It was just to go down there, get your brains kicked in, and go home.
Yeah.
And that's why you came out in the second half. You couldn't protect JG. You did try to do the exact same things over and over again, and it was one pick or two picks in the second half?
I think it was two picks. But
two picks, three fumbles,
well,
and then they recovered the one for a touchdown.
There was one time he went to throw, and one just popped up, and I can't remember if it hit the ground or if he caught it, because if he caught it after that, it would just technically be an interception. So
there was at least one pick, and then they picked up the fumble for a touchdown. Ugalari or something.
What was the score at halftime?
21-20.
Top 15 matchup.
And we ended up losing by 20 plus. I mean, we lost by more than 20. I know that because, like, that stat still held
until
I think
the final was 41-21, right?
I thought it was worse than that, honestly.
It might have been 44 to, like, 20.
Might have been 44-21.
Yeah.
Because we didn't score again.
But that was the thing for me. It was just, all right, you came out here and you've shown this.
44-21.
Like, yeah.
There's at least some talent. But again, like, a lot of that talent is now gone, just because of how incompetent the organization was headed by Philip Fulmer and Jeremy Pruitt. And so, I don't know. Also, I kind of bring up the Mike Leach thing because that just got me heated yesterday, because some national people were like, they could have had Schiano and they would have been in a much better situation. They're like, they thought they were too good for Schiano. It's like, hell yeah, we were. Hell yeah, we still are.
Yeah, could have Mike Leach. I mean, who wouldn't want Mike Leach over Greg Schiano?
Rutgers, that's it. Was there irrelevant? It's like, yeah, Mike Leach or
Mike Leach wouldn't have gone to Rutgers. If I'm a Rutgers fan, I'd still rather have Mike Leach.
Yeah, but they're like, Rutgers is having success. I was like, they went 3-6 last year.
Better than 3-7. Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
They just need to play one more game against, you know, anybody.
Well, I know.
How many games did the Big Ten play?
It was different.
I don't know.
Because what was the rule? Like, Ohio State, you had to play seven, and they only played six, but they adjusted the rule there at the end to get them in the championship game?
Stupid. I know I kind of just, like, this was different than most depots, but I bring this up because I won't necessarily say it about Tennessee football, but at least for the sport as a whole, I'm optimistic about the future of it. I actually really like where I think it's headed. And I know a lot of people, like, want to hold on to what we've had in the past, but you have to think of it, and again, it does go from a generational perspective. I've not really seen Tennessee do anything of merit, so I think a complete shift at least gives us a better chance of getting back to some sort of relevancy.
I mean, I guess in a way it resets the playing field. You know what I'm saying? Like, everyone's kind of going to have to figure it out. Like, the NIL stuff, like, yeah, like, maybe people with more resources like Alabama, and like, they're already a juggernaut, so they have that to sell. But if you can just kind of outthink some other people, like, there's a chance for you to set yourself apart.
And, like,
Which does worry me, though, like, to see, you know, well, I know it's not necessarily real, but, like, Bryce Young apparently being close to seven figures, the Milo Sweet, it's like, we don't have much so far.
But that's because...
But yeah,
those guys
we're a
are at least
team.
Going to be. Yeah, that's our big problem.
Well, we said it, I mean, all last year, like, who's the team's biggest star? It was Eric Gray. Then he leaves, and it's like, now who? Like, Jalen Hyatt, maybe.
He was your middle linebacker.
Yeah.
So
he was also gone. But, like, once those guys left, like, in a way, it's kind of fun. Like I said that yesterday. Like it's going to be fun to watch this team become, you know, like certain players are, you know, even though they might not be nationally like, you know, Heisman contenders, but like you're going to have players emerge that are quote unquote your best player.
Yeah, like even if you're bad, you're going to have somebody kind of rise above the rest.
Yeah, at a given position. So, I mean, I'm excited to see that. I mean, it's going to be a lot of familiar faces, but really when you look at, like, quarterback's going to be different, receivers are going to be different, the defense is going to be largely different.
Do we get the SEC, like, all SEC teams and SEC predictions from the media tomorrow? Does that come out tomorrow, or we got to wait for after the weekend? I can't remember when that comes out.
No, I think it's either tomorrow, because today's the last day, right?
Yeah, they got three guys going today.
They might. I mean, they vote today. I don't know how quickly they'll tally them. I mean, it's an online survey. You might get that this afternoon. Hmm. But it'll be this afternoon or tomorrow morning.
But I guess long story short, I just wanted to make sure I kind of had myself on the record for where I'm at. And just going back to that real quick, I know I haven't been overly impressed with Danny White since he got here. I still, at the time, like I'll just be up front, I thought that was a really good hire, and I'm still at least somewhat hopeful that it turns out to be. I know his first several decisions and how he kind of was reacting to the fans was not what I would have done. No. But I'm at least going to give his guy a opportunity to see the field and see what they can put out there. So,
what other choice do you have?
I did. Well, I'm kind of just like becoming a fan of the league, you know, like – like Rob Lowe, whenever he's sitting there and he's got his NFL hat on, and it's just like, I just hope everyone has fun.
That's you?
I kind of for college football now, yeah.
I saw a funny meme, and it said Jalen Hurts in 2026 when he goes to watch Alabama and Oklahoma in the SEC championship game. Hmm. Insert Rob Lowe.
Just have fun. All right.
But come with back. With all the changes, I love chaos. It's not a pit. The ladder.
Hour three continues here from the Fan Run Studios, Fox Sports Knoxville.
It's true.
865-546-8200, last call for phone calls today. If you want to weigh in on the realignment possibilities. Texas, Oklahoma reportedly reaching out to the SEC with interest. We go next to Jay on the horn. What's up, Jay? You're on three and out.
Well, guys, I haven't got to hear your opinion, but what are you for it or against it, this realignment?
100% for it. Couldn't be happier.
Why? And Davey, why would you be 100% for something that's going to make it obviously a lot harder to get where Tennessee or where, you know, I don't know why any program would be for this, because does it not make your life a lot harder?
Makes you more money, gets more eyes on the product. I mean, the odds of probably winning just, we'll say, like the SEC championship go down just simply based off numbers, but it's going to give you more opportunities, I would say, to make the college football playoff, especially if you're at the forefront. You got to remember, too, like the playoff's expanding, and by the time this happens, the playoff will have already expanded, so you're not looking at just four teams getting in. And
right.
I just know that the landscape is going to be changing, and it's one of those things where it's you either embrace what's about to happen or you get left behind. And if you're Tennessee and you don't try to embrace it, we're just going to fall farther down than we already are.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, I wonder how much more money would be involved, but I don't, you know, Pete Thamel's article last night made it sound like that. I mean, everything I'm seeing, this is happening. I mean, they're doing the whole sidestep denying process. They're not actually just coming out and saying it's not true. You know, Thamel is saying that the votes are not going to be an issue, that SEC will easily get the votes.
Yeah, they have to have 11 of 14.
Yeah, he said that's not going to be an issue.
Yeah, we talked about it. Only about two schools we could see probably causing issue. One for sure, but I think really that
A&M is not going to give them the vote.
Yeah, that's the only one I actually see that Sankey's not going to be able to convince. And I think like even if there are people on the fence, Sankey's going to have them on his side versus they're going to be on Texas A&M's side.
Well, you know, something I've always said is that something that helps these SEC teams is the exclusivity that you can offer to come play SEC football. And now you got Texas and Oklahoma, two powerhouses joining. You know, I don't think it's just going to be all peaches. And it's why I've said if you're Tennessee, you do not want a Virginia or a North Carolina school joining the SEC. It's going to make your life, it weakens you. I mean, point blank, it weakens you. Because now North Carolina can offer SEC football, or Virginia Tech can offer SEC football. And I do think it's going to make some people's lives harder. I think it's going to be interesting, though.
Well, it's definitely going to be interesting. Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm neutral. Like, I'm not against it. I'm not, like, pounding the table for it, saying this is the best thing ever. Like, I don't think the SEC as a whole needed help financially. But, I mean, I guess if some is good, more is better.
Well, Jay, you kind of mentioned earlier in your call about how in the article they were talking about, like, it's inevitable, like, that Texas is leaving the Big 12. And we kind of talked about it earlier. It's like back in the early 2010s, like, there was talk that they're going to the Pac-12, or I guess the Pac-10 back then. And so with that just being the case, if you're Greg Sankey, you have to look at it from a standpoint of, if I don't get them, they're going to make somebody else stronger, which could weaken us as a conference. And I know a lot of people would probably fight back. It's like, well, the SEC is still going to be the strongest, but it's you're kind of in an arms race against other conferences at this point, because when you go back to last year and you look at whenever Mark Emmert said, all right, conferences, you're on your own, figure out your own schedule. And now we've even seen with the most recent Supreme Court decision as it relates to what is likely to come of this NIL, the conferences realize, like, the NCAA is not going to be standing in the way of how we operate. Now, granted, we're not going to be able to cheat and do things that fall out of that purview, but at the same time, it's kind of an anything goes from it's how are we going to make ourselves stronger. And so I do see this happening, where you're going to have these conferences just try to pound the other down and just rise to the top and be the ultimate product. Because these TV rights deals, if you go back to the Supreme Court case in 1984, which involved the regents for the University of Oklahoma and Georgia, that's what set in motion where college football is today. And so then in this most recent Supreme Court case this summer is like that next step. And so you saw a – like, just think about where college football was in 1984 to where it was in 2021, and how much of a change that actually occurred over that amount of time.
Well, Davey, I was just going to say, right now, the SEC is still so far ahead of the other conferences. I mean, the Pac-12, you got Oregon and maybe USC, but when is USC has not been good since Pete Carroll, and they weren't good before Pete Carroll. They had one little stint with Pete Carroll, and that was it. And you got the Big Ten. Ohio State dominates that conference. Michigan is a joke. Wisconsin's decent, but when they go and play a good team, they get throttled. And then you know what the ACC is. It's Clemson. Yes.
I should also say that I don't think this is the end, even if you add Texas and Oklahoma. Like, I don't think it stops there. Like, it's going to continue to build, and so you're going to eventually, like, what I've wanted for a long time is I just want the Power Five to break away. And so having talked with people that are in these conference offices, they don't necessarily think that that's going to happen, but they do realize, like, it is going to change so dramatically that you're not going to be able to really recognize what has happened. But it's still one of those things to where I agree with you, the SEC is far and above better than the other conferences, especially whenever it comes to football. But at this moment, they also see it's like, well, we want to make sure we hold on. It's more of the rich get richer, and everyone else
is changing. Yeah. They want to be out in front of it.
Yeah.
You know, for example, if Oklahoma and Texas were like, oh, well, we're going to the ACC. Yeah. I mean, that doesn't necessarily make it harder for Tennessee to win an SEC championship, but it does give the ACC, you know, a lot of power. I mean, I know geographically that doesn't make any sense, but you know, you'd rather gain them or them stay put than, you know, go into the ACC, which is in your footprint, and have to deal with them then.
Well, if they do come to this conference, I don't see any other conference. I don't care if the Big Ten has Notre Dame or whatever. There is no other conference that's going to be able to touch this one. I mean, the SEC will be so far ahead in terms of competition that how we judge and look at them, I mean, you're going to have to look at three or maybe even four lost teams coming from this conference. because it's going to be like the NFL where you have teams that are losing three or four games and they're still the best teams in the country. And
yeah, I said that earlier. Like gone is the undefeated season at that point.
Yeah,
most likely.
Well, it's like that for basketball now. That's kind of how you look at it. Like as they just continue to expand on the amount of games you played, obviously with that much room for error, you're going to lose at least one. So I don't hold on to the fact it's like, oh yeah, well we had that undefeated season, because like even with the NFL now, man, like the last undefeated team was what, the Dolphins in 72.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going that way.
Wild times, guys. Hell, wow. In a few weeks we have Oklahoma and Texas as members. That's going to be crazy.
Yeah, I'm curious to see you,
thanks, Jay. Appreciate it.
Obviously, we know it won't be until 2025 till they could actually join, unless something crazy happens between now and then. But I don't see that being necessarily the case.
No, I mean, the Big 12 is not going to let them go early.
So how does that marriage work? It's pretty much, at that point, what it is the parents are still married, but they're waiting for the kids to leave the house before they end up getting the divorce.
No, that's what I said earlier. Like if you're the Big 12, you don't want to help strengthen Texas and Oklahoma right before they leave your conference. But while they're there, any success they have is your success. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. It's weird. Like, I don't know how you balance that. It's like, you know, training somebody how to do your job, and then they take your job. Like, you want to help them.
Like
you
Johnny Majors and Philip Fulmer.
Basically. How'd that work out for Johnny? Not good, Bob. And maybe that would be so awkward that, you know, maybe Bowlesby says, you know what, just go ahead and go. Like, we'll let you out in 2022 or 23. Just go. There's no need in just dragging this out for 3 years when we know you're leaving.
Yeah, they probably could cut a deal, though, to where, like, they retain a certain amount of revenue that would come back to
right,
the
like 12. A percentage.
I mean, because like whenever,
that's what Notre Dame and ACC did.
Well, there's that, but also whenever Nebraska and Maryland went to the Big Ten for the TV rights deal that's in place, they didn't get the same amount of revenue share as the other institutions that were originally in it.
Right. And is it possible that the Big 12, I mean, if they got 4 years, I don't know when they would sign the contracts and everything as far as Texas and Oklahoma officially joining the SEC, but is it possible now that Bowlesby and the Big 12 put their heads together and try to strengthen the Big 12 in hopes of keeping Texas and Oklahoma? Like, could they go and try?
Yeah, they could try to make a power play, and it's like, listen, like we can put this. Like, I mean, they're going to come back and like have a counter offer. It's like because they.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. I wonder what that would be.
And
like, if you go and try to grab like Oregon, Stanford, Southern, like, I mean, because right now, who in the Pac-12 is like, yeah, Pac-12, we're staying here.
See, that's the point too. It was funny. My gosh, I sent it to you yesterday, but the new commissioner of the Pac-12 had a tweet yesterday.
Oh yeah, like my first week on the job, didn't see this coming or something. Just when I thought it was going to be an easy first month on the job.
Where did I send that to?
Because if I'm the Pac-12 commissioner, that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about the Big 12 realizing, you know, we got to pull out all the stops to try and keep Oklahoma and Texas, because, I mean, there's no way they want to lose those. So if they can go grab, I mean, who would be the best fit? I mean, like, I don't think they can go get Nebraska back at this point. Man. But, like, if you go get Southern Cal and UCLA,
well, it would be
Stanford,
harder, but, I mean, at this point, you're better off. If you're the Big 12 and that's what you got going, you might just want to try to combine those conferences.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I don't know if they would want to do that many.
It'd be 20 at that point if you lose them.
Yeah.
And we're at 16. Nebraska goes to, not Nebraska, Notre Dame goes to the ACC. They're at 15. They only have to get one more to 16. Or maybe you have some other schools. I think if you're the Big Ten, you're probably better off just trying to draw Iowa State and who else could we throw up there? I'd say actually West Virginia probably go to the ACC. So West Virginia, Notre Dame go ACC.
Mm.
Iowa State.
That puts the Big 12
at 7.
And
Oklahoma State and Oklahoma State go to the Big 10, and then you have the rest of Pac-12 and Big 12 combine. And there's your four conferences, because it's like, I think it's ultimately going to get to four conferences, because when you look at where the Big 12 and the Big 12 and the Pac-12 are currently from a financial standpoint, they got issues. George Klivikoff.
Big 12's not that bad though, is it? Weren't they third?
But
I thought
Yes, but that's contingent on Texas and Oklahoma being in that conference.
Oh, no, I know, yeah.
So George Klavikoff, the new commissioner of the Pac-12, said, just when I thought my first month on the job could not get more interesting. I mean, he's going to have to earn that money, like, because that's – like he's got a uphill
battle.
Better
close down
well.
That San Francisco TV studio. Save some rent.
I mean, if you're the Pac-12, like, that's probably the best thing for you is to move out into the middle of the country and have a office headquartered there.
Topeka, Kansas. Probably cheap rent there.
Mm-hmm. I'd probably go to Colorado somewhere.
But I'm just saying, based on the recent joke that has been the Pac-12, like, what school would not dive to the Big 12?
But, yeah, I mean,
I mean, sprint to get out of that conference.
Cause it,
lack of leadership,
that's the thing
going
too.
Broke, just
and,
stupid.
And I don't know what the current negotiations are like for the Big 12 whenever it comes to their new TV rights deals. Because, I mean, if Texas goes, they're not going to keep the name the Longhorn, like the Longhorn Network.
Yeah, Katie Britt asked about that, like what happens to the Longhorn. I think in the next 10 years, you're going to see, for certain teams, not all of them, but I think there's going to be, I mean, obviously I don't think like the SEC or ACC network is going away, but I could absolutely see teams like Tennessee, Florida, Georgia, Alabama. I think you could see your own, I don't want to call it necessarily a network, but essentially a channel for just that team. I mean, it's so much easier to create content now. Like, why would you not have, I mean, you could just simulcast conversations, interview the whole time. I mean, and just stack it up. Like, if you're the University of Tennessee and you own rights to an old game, like, hey, we're playing the, you know, this game that we played on ESPN all these years ago, or here's the 2003 Miami game that we won 10-6. Like, you just show that, and then you have your own in-house content, kind of like Hard Knocks.
I mean, feeds are, like, it used to be you had to have one feed because you had to have all this tech to deliver it. If you were starting a new ESPN or a competitor to ESPN, mm-hmm. I don't know what is Stadium even. Are they trying to do that or that?
Three
the DAZ no like a TV network.
Oh, CBS was doing
that's
some
all
of that
digital.
Stuff.
Like if you start,
yeah, CBS is doing that.
If you start an all digital, yeah, TV network. Why not just have a different stream per team? But when you go to the like, say you go to the Paul Feinbaum show, for example, from mm-hmm. whatever in the afternoon. Say you got a show from 3 to 6, that's all about SEC football or whatever, mm-hmm. then just every feed you click on would just go to that show during that window. But if you click on it at 6:30, maybe you click on the Alabama feed, you're watching an old Alabama-Auburn game. Click on the Tennessee feed, you're watching an old Tennessee-Florida mm-hmm. game
yeah.
that Tennessee won or whatever.
Right.
So, like, that's, having multiple digital feeds is not a big deal.
Yeah, and I think in the next 10 years you're going to have that. Because all these, like, they're just stacking content. Like, they've got it.
Right.
And it's just, you know, having it all in one spot and then, you know, something
people
I
are
say
more
live.
Picky because they have more options. So
right.
why not deliver a platform that allows them to be picky all on your platform?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like a Netflix thing, and they even curates to you.
Yeah, if I want to go watch highlights of Tennessee basketball last year, I mean, I could scroll through Twitter and go to each individual game. But what if they were all just like, boom, here's every highlight package, extended highlight package from every game last year for football, for you know whatever.
So when I created, I was trying to obviously come together, kind of create my own constitution of sorts. This was just one of the projects I kind of was working on over COVID when I didn't have a lot going on, was like what I would call that Power 5 breakaway. And, I mean, at the time, Sankey was strictly for that 8-game conference schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And
until he got a taste of 10.
And so, yeah. And so ultimately, once they had to adjust their schedule and go to 10 games, they figured out, like, this is where it's at. And they realized that not having that non-conference game, that even though I still think they want to have like the cupcake games get scheduled, I don't know if they're necessarily like wanting like 2 or 3 of those. They might just want to keep it at 1 after this.
I could see, yeah, like 1 or 2.
Because whenever it was just all SEC games, like people were just tuning in. One, I mean, they couldn't really go out for a lot of places,
true.
But you just saw that it's like, all right, any game there's that possibility it's a conference game, there's going to typically be a lot closer lines mm-hmm. than, oh, we're not just going to see outside of like the main powers at play a 40-point line to watch. And so you had more eyes on these games, and it wasn't so much of a lull in the schedule outside of like having games canceled, but they realized in a normal scenario, like that's not going to be a thing.
Well, and it's for a long time it's been, oh, yeah, we got to schedule these cupcakes so that we can help pay these smaller schools and fund it, but I mean, if you listen to Greg Sankey on Monday, it sounds like he and the powers that be in college football are sick of that. And not just college football, but college athletics. Like, why should we have our team schedule games that nobody's going to watch on TV so that we can pay, you know, Southwest Directional U? Why would we not add another conference game, mandate that we schedule Power 5 so that every game in the conference, every week, all year long, is a must-watch game? I mean, yeah, sorry, UT Martin. But, I mean, it feels like college football and college athletics as a whole, you're starting to see the big boys, they're sick of sharing, is what it feels like. Mm-hmm. And then being beholden to, you know, the blanket laws of the NCAA when they have the resources to do anything and everything they want.
And that's what happened in 1984. That's why the lawsuit was filed, because you had Georgia and Oklahoma wanting to play a game when they were both top five programs in the country and mm-hmm. be nationally broadcasted, mm-hmm. and they had two nobodies play because the NCAA said, no, this is their time to be on TV.
Right.
And the school said, nope, we're going to go negotiate our own rights deals. The NCAA said, if you do that, we'll basically just kick you out. Took them to court. Schools won. We're here now because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's some SEC network realignment with pods, and
I saw that
it's just not as good as what we came up with. We'll tell you what they have though on the flip side. Wrap up the show. Final segment next. So SEC Network's pods are pretty good. The big changes, it's Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, South Carolina, and then Alabama, Auburn, Tennessee, Vanderbilt. I can see the logic there. It just would feel really weird for Tennessee not to play Florida and Georgia every year.
Yes, it would.
It would feel normal for them to play Alabama, and I guess Auburn's more of an old school type good game for Tennessee fans anyway. I mean, you're going to play these teams either way. The problem I was trying to avoid that they don't handle well here is because they have LSU and Texas A&M with the two Mississippi schools, they've separated LSU from Arkansas. So there's no more
which you
golden,
didn't want to do.
There's no more golden boot rivalry there. It's Arkansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, Texas. All the big two in each division are the same way that I had it. So they're definitely kind of on the right
yeah, I mean, that's,
track.
We felt like the top eight were set, and when you pair them up, it's actually relatively easy.
Yeah. And then the bottom pods, and it keeps Texas A&M away from Texas, so their pods kind of work. They have play the other three teams in your pod every season, play two games against each of the other four pods.
So how many games are they still looking at?
So it's still eight. I don't know how. I'd have to see the formula on how you decide who those two teams are. I mean, you could randomly draw it, I guess, if you wanted to, all the way out to like scheduling an exact formula.
Well, it's also where the difference comes in with the NFL versus college is obviously the turnover in players is a lot more frequent.
Right.
And I mean, also now that you have basically free agency there, it'd be curious to go. But the NFL, what they do is they rotate each year, and then based off where you finished in your division, they will cross-reference that to, like, whoever finished third. Like, if you finished third and another team finished third in their division, and that's the division you're supposed to be playing next year, that's the team you're going to play the following season.
Yeah, and I've done scheduling like this for a fantasy football league where we had five divisions of four teams each, and we had a bunch of slotted games like that. And it can become a nightmare really fast. Like, you have to develop a formula that works cleanly each time like the NFL does. It is easier with 16 because everything's fours and you know, one of our problems was we have five divisions, four teams. It was kind of a mess. But once you kind of develop the algorithm, it can work. I think the fans would like for it to be as clean as possible, though.
Naturally.
So, I don't know. We'll see how that goes. Davey, you got some Big 12 numbers?
Yeah, so I've gone back and pulled up some of my stuff, and what I thought was kind of interesting was, and this information is from the 2018 through the 2019 fiscal year as far as total revenue. You do also have to account that there are less Big 12 teams than any other conference, so they've got two less in the Pac-12, and then the ACC, SEC, and Big 10 are all at 14. But you look at it, and Big 10 was in charge as far as $781.5 million per year. SEC second at $720.6 million. Their member distribution or distribution per member institution in the SEC was $45.3 million that year. Then you go to the Pac-12 at $530.4 million, the ACC at $455.4 million. But you also got to remember that whenever the ACC brought in Notre Dame, their number is going to shoot up pretty high. And then, but for the Big 12, they were obviously at the bottom. It looks like they actually had a higher distribution rate per member institution than the ACC, but they're looking at $439 million that year. So, but a big portion of that is also just simply due to having Texas and Oklahoma. And if you go into the for 2020, this was before COVID hit, I believe, but you had 39 major college football schools have scheduled a total of 49 bye games worth an estimated $65 million. So if you're just looking at the numbers, like whenever we go and say, hey, Georgia State, come in here and play us, you had $65 million worth of Power 5 teams buying those games.
I mean, we talked about like it. If a team brings enough value to a league, for the league to make more money per school, mm-hmm. then it makes sense for the league. And if the team leaving, or the team coming into the league, can then make more money on their normal share out of the entire league, then it makes more sense for the team. And yeah. I think Oklahoma, Texas is very easy to
no,
see
it's,
why.
No, it's a very symbiotic relationship. If we were to add it, at least financially. I found an interesting – I'm not exactly sure what their formula is here, but the Wall Street Journal ranked college football program value. And if the SEC were to add Texas and Oklahoma, they would have seven of the top 10 most valuable college football programs in the country.
Are the other two – or I guess the other three, would it be Michigan, Ohio State, and – I guess Clemson recently?
Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to go with USC.
No, not even. They're not in the top 10. They're not in the top 20. They are 23rd. Let's see here. So that'd be seven of the top 10. Nine of the top 12. And 11 of the top 20. If you were to add those two.
It's an arms race.
That's crazy, though, to think if you add Texas and Oklahoma, the SEC would have seven of the top 10 most valuable.
Yeah. It's what they're doing, man.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, yeah, absolutely.
Trying to make a monopoly.
Texas is number one. And again, this it gives me three numbers. It gives their, and this is of 2018, it gives me their revenue, 2018 value and 2017 value, and then I guess there's some formula they use with those three numbers or maybe some other numbers too to kind of rank where you stack up as far as value nationally. Tennessee's 10th nationally.
That's good.
But like I said, that'd be 7th in the SEC if you add Texas and Oklahoma. Texas 1, Ohio State 2, Bama 3, Michigan 4, Notre Dame 5. Then it would be Georgia, Oklahoma, Auburn, LSU, Tennessee. Do you want to know what our 2018 value was as a football program?
Yeah.
$727,850,000.
Money's crazy.
Is anybody, I know we're about out of time, but as far as how bad the schools have been playing football, anyone even close to us that's up there?
Probably not. I mean, when I rank these teams.
Nebraska's 15th. Overall, Arkansas 16th, South Carolina 17th. All these other ones are way better than us. It's amazing that we're 10th, honestly.
Just wait till we're good.
Wait till next year.
It's true.
Sleeping you giant. Just wait. Sleeping giant. Sleeping forever.
What's his next?
Coma.